Well, listeners, unless you have a clear recollection of the days when Medicare became the law of the land back in the 1960s, then the events of this week may be the most important, if not the most contentious, we will see in our lifetimes. Yes, health care reform, also called health insurance reform, was passed, signed into law. Almost everyone seems to have an opinion, either very much for or very much against. Some can see both sides, but few of us are complacent about the topic. Including our guest this morning, Dr. Dave Smith, president of Upstate. Welcome back, Dr. Smith.
Good morning.
It's been a while since we've seen you. We only bring you in when we've got the biggest topics, and boy, they don't get bigger than this, do they?
No, they don't, but it's vital.
You know, the Association of Medical Colleges, which is a part of Upstate belongs to, these are what medical universities all across the country, they made a statement coming out very much in favor of reform, didn't they?
They did, as did the Association of Academic Health Centers, which are the broad universities that contain medical schools, because I think they see this as a just and societal necessity right now. We cannot continue in the way that we've been doing it. And even though there are some provisions in the bill that may hurt some of the things that we do, the overall good, I think, came to the clear light by all the academic health centers and the colleges of medicine.
What do you think among all the various tenets, and we're not going to try to list them because people have heard them over and over ad nauseum over the last week or 10 days in particular, what are the biggest changes that you see that maybe you embrace and then maybe you're not so thrilled about?
Well, I think several you're going to see. A lot of this phases in. I think this is a very smart bill in a number of ways, and that is, of course, there's a lot of phase-in aspects. So, in fact, we're going to learn as we go. Which for some it may cause pause. For others, I think it's a smart approach. Most importantly is coverage. 26 million Americans will have coverage. It's unconscionable that we don't have coverage now. We see the consequences of it in our emergency room here every single day, that people delay care. And it is not because they're not thinking about their own health. It is because they're looking at the cost of care and the fact that they don't have insurance to cover it. So they come later, they come sicker, and sometimes the consequences are very dreadful.
And they will get healthier, won't they? Because they will have these preventive pieces in place to help them keep getting at that point.
Precisely. And that is probably the second point after the coverage issue. And that is there's a lot of focus on prevention. We've given it really lip service in this country over the years. We don't talk about pap smears, mammography, new screening, as well as immunizations. And now it's coming to the forefront and is going to be covered. There's requirements, provisions that you really should have first dollar coverage to enable someone to, in fact, put prevention first rather than, again, waiting for the consequences. The third area that I think is vital is pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. As the population ages and for all of us, it becomes personal. And for me as a pediatrician, we see this in many of our special needs kids that come in with very complex problems and issues. We see it over at Krause with the newborn intensive care unit. We see it at St. Joe's and community. But it is the fact that no longer can insurance companies or anyone else restrict their ability to have health care because of a pre-existing condition. And then in, of course, 2014, the adults that have pre-existing conditions will also be protected.
Yes.
This is really putting the United States into a first world status on its health care like it is as an economy.
Well, you know, until this week, we were the only industrialized nation in the world that didn't have this universal approach to care. And I say it's about time, and I know you do too. You know, though, one of the biggest elephants in the healthcare reform room is the question of primary care. And you being the head of an academic medical center, this is a problem that you have run into as well. We are now going to have this emphasis on prevention. We're going to have somewhere between 25 and 30 million new people who can access the care. How are we going to have enough doctors to take care of it?
As you know, it's both doctors as well as nurses and the entire health team, including allied health professions, of which I was just at our college here this morning. There are provisions here to be able to, one, incentivize more individual students to go into primary care and some of the allied health professions and nursing. But I think this is an area where during reconciliation and further thought, we're going to have to enhance. That being that I think the provisions, some of them will actually only exist for several years and then expire. And that means also shifting more payments away from some costly subspecialties to primary care, because it's not just enough that we produce more primary care doctors. In other words, pediatricians, family docs, internal medicine, OB-GYN,
right.
Obstetricians, gynecologists, as well as even general surgery, which is becoming a rarity in many parts of New York State, but that we're going to have a sustained effort. The other is we're going to need to increase our cap In other words, the number of residents that we train after they graduate from medical school. And right now there is a restriction on that. While we could grow the medical school class size, we really hit a glass ceiling on the residency side when they're doing specialty, including in primary care. There are some provisions, but this is another area where I think we're going to need a little bit more clarity. It was clearly acknowledged by the drafters, but it's one that we're going to work with them from the point of view from medical schools, nursing colleges and universities, as well as the allied health professions.
Where does that cap come from right now?
It is a cap that is provided by Medicare. It is a restriction of funds that are used to pay the salary stipend for residents.
I see.
And there is a cap at the federal level. There's a cap at the state level. So we're butting up against it. Even if we increased class sizes yesterday, we would have this problem.
Aha. So you're going to be working toward what? Relieving that cap and more incentives for doctors to go into primary care. And so our listeners understand, this has to do with reimbursement. Primary care doctors are not reimbursed at same rates as the specialists are. And therefore, do you blame them? Students choose some of the specialties that maybe don't have the bad hours. I mean, they're difficult hours that primary care doctors work, and under those constraints of being reimbursed.
Well, that and the issue, as you know well, which is the fact that many of these students, including our own at a public university, and of course, less state support coming to these state universities, tuition is going up. And our average indebtedness of our medical students now is over $140,000.
Yeah.
They're looking at that price tag, and I will be honest, every survey shows that they're making decisions in their residencies based on that price tag. It was the size of a small mortgage.
Absolutely. And you really can't blame them, can you?
Or a large mortgage.
I was very excited to see that Upstate had its match program this past week, and they've matched, 59 new students are going to in primary care?
That's correct.
That's a huge number.
I think a lot of credit to the dean and the faculty where we're able to expand some of our programs, like our rural med program, which we've talked about before. And the fact that we're recruiting more New Yorkers, even at a time of diminished support from the state, and more rural New Yorkers in all of our colleges to really begin to address, including in our PA program, our physician assistance program. All of these, there's a lot of complexities to healthcare reform. But it really does have to come together at the end of the day to take care of the patient who's sitting in front of you.
Yeah. We still have a whole lot to learn, don't we? We'll be going along and learning as we go.
We do, but it's an exciting time, and there's some real opportunities through this bill.
There are. Well, Dr. Dave Smith, president of Upstate, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Hi. I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's checkup from the neck up. Mr. Nardi's excuse therapy, or 3 minutes to 20% less chance of a heart problem. Well, dear tuner-inners, if you listen up for the next 3 minutes, you might just reduce your chance of a heart attack or dying from a heart attack by 20%. Yep. This past week, Harvard researchers combined the results of 8 scientifically sound studies of replacing saturated fat in our diet with polyunsaturated fat, like soybean oil. The group of people who did this for at least a year had about 20% fewer heart attacks and cardiac deaths than the group that didn't. That's right, about 20% less if we just substitute polyunsaturated fat for saturated fat. Important, though, we can't just cut saturated fat out of our diet or substitute something else for it, like carbs. We have to get the polyunsaturated fat in, too. They have a heart protective effect. Now, this has been big news in the media over the last few days, and I bet a lot of you have already heard about this study. But my question is, how many of us have actually made the switch to saturated to polyun, or at least made a real commitment, real, to doing so the next time we go to the grocery? Why do I ask? Well, it all goes back to sixth grade. One day, I didn't do my homework. When our teacher, Mr. Nardi, asked me about it and I gave him my excuse, I think I left my book in my locker at school or something. And I wasn't fibbing, it was true. And I really believed it was a problem that could not possibly have been solved the night before when I was supposed to be homeworking it up. Mr. Nardi said, "Mr. O'Neill," this was before I was Dr. O'Neill, "where there's a will, there's a way. Where there's a will, there's a way, Mr. O'Neill." I never forgot that. It probably set me on the course to being a psychologist. And now, actually being Dr. O'Neill, a psychologist, I often work with myself and other people about shifting from knowing something to doing something about it, about once we know what makes sense to do but aren't doing it yet, figuring out what's in the way, our excuse, grabbing our will to move it out of the way and making the change. So if we want to keep our ticker ticking but haven't yet done our homework and made the switch to Pollyann, remember Mr. Nardi's excuse therapy. Where there's a will, there's a way. And figure out our way. Then we can all sing together. I did it my way. I'm Dr. Rich. I did it my way. O'Neill, thanks for tuning in.